Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. June 20th, 2021. The program of free choice. Reshimota are data embedded in us, informational genes. It is as if I am buying a new computer that has nothing installed yet, so I upload the program and data into it. This data creates a certain setup inside the computer. That is exactly how man is built. We already have been given an animalistic, instinctive program to exist as a living organism. There is another program inside called man, designed to lead us to the level of adhesion with the Creator. Inside this program, we receive data, the so-called records, reshimot. The program processes this data and works according to it, but there is another parameter in this, a degree of freedom given to us, as a free choice. Do we want this program to work in the form of bestowal and not in the form of egoistic reception? This is how we advance, managing ourselves and our lives. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson June 11, 2021, every day will be like new in your eyes. My dear subscribers. Comment, you have more than 2 million subscribers on Facebook, more than 260,000 subscribers on YouTube. They are just like humanity in front of us, Russian speaking, but scattered all over the world. Even in Mongolia, there are about 2,000 subscribers. There are subscribers in the Emirates. And so on. They are people of different religions, ages, and nationalities. And they are gathered here, they are watching and listening. Their opinions clash, especially when events like the last war in Israel occur. There is your opinion. There are a lot of comments from Jews, Muslims, and Christians. What would you say to all our subscribers, those who watch us? Will you be separating what you say to Jews, Muslims, and Christians? My response, no. No at all. They should see this from the way I treat my students, how I talk and what I do. Nothing like that. For me, humanity is not divided into nations, into nationalities, into some other fragments, into religions, and so on. For me, humanity is divided into two parts. 99.999999% are the people who just live, and it doesn't matter who they are and what they are, and 0.00000001% is that part of the people, the mighty bunch, which can influence the Creator and, through him, the entire world. This is what I can say. For me, this is how humanity is divided. Question, and to those who listen to you, and read? Answer, these are my students. I would tell them that for me there are no differences between religions, nationalities, only the desire to reveal the upper governing force in order to change us, and our world. And nothing else is needed. Question. And when there is a disagreement? There are a lot of disagreements and clashes in the comments. Answer. This is along the way. They still want to show themselves in some way all the time, and they are nervous. After all, we live in a difficult time. But I understand them. I would, of course, very much like the world to gradually begin to understand how far this wisdom is detached from all our conventions, national and religious. We address all people on earth. We are in such a state that we need to reveal the upper governing force. You can be engaged in any religion, do any job, anything at all, it does not matter. This upper governing force is above us, all and does not apply to any of us, in particular. If you want it to treat you in a special way, you should come closer to it. This is what the wisdom of Kabbalah is talking about. Let's find out how we can come closer to this force. It is possible. This is the kind of people I am trying to gather together and teach how to do it. From Kab TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, May 27, 2021. My new article on LinkedIn, A Granddad's Heart. When I first became a granddad and saw my grandson for the first time, my heart filled with love. I held him in my arms. I wanted to play with him, to do something for him to make him feel good. I had never experienced such an emotion before that time. Love is the reason we are here in this world. It is the reason why the world was created. Yet, unlike natural love, such as the instinctive love of a grandfather to a grandchild, among strangers, there is natural resistance, alienation, and enmity, rather than love. However, life is formed precisely by overcoming these emotions. Every living being evolves by overcoming resistance and hardships. These obstacles create the need for growth and development. Had it not been for hardships and resistance, there would be no evolution and humans would never have come to be. Feelings of separation from others, alienation, and enmity are therefore not negative emotions, they are levers for growth. We see them as negative when we don't want to rise above them and grow. If, instead of rejecting them and fearing them, we would see them as opportunities to grow and develop ourselves, we would welcome them and benefit from them tremendously. Moreover, by rising above them, we would create a greater and tighter bond than the one we had before the appearance of those hindrances. For example, think of the complexity of a unicellular creature compared to the complexity of the human body. They are incomparable. The reason for the creation of such a complex system as the human body is precisely the obstacles that all the levels of complexity encountered before they came to make a human organism. In a sense, therefore, we owe our lives, our existence, to the hatred and separation that appeared on the levels preceding ours. This should teach us that we cannot eschew our duty to face the hatred that is being revealed among us today. Hatred appears for no other reason other than to promote evolution and greater union. If we avoid facing our resistance and uniting above the new and tougher level of hatred, we will hamper the evolution of our own species and pay heavily for it. Our attitude toward the social crises plaguing our planet should therefore not be as natural as among family, but rather conscious and intentional. We should acknowledge that we do not feel like family, use family relations as an example to strive for, and try, together, to establish such relationships among us. The key word here is together. Overcoming mutual alienation must be a mutual effort in which all parts of the population participate. Otherwise, one part will exploit the other and the whole feat will tumble like a deck of cards. We must install the awareness of how paramount it is that we form union above our separation until we truly feel as one family. Today, our lives, and the lives of our loved ones, depend on it. Michael Lehtman, on Quora, how do you find your life's purpose? We can find our life's purpose by learning the higher plan and program of nature that develops us toward life's purpose at every moment. By learning nature's plan, we gradually start feeling what we can realize in our present incarnation, what our fate was in our previous incarnation, how nature operates, why we were created the way we were, and how we develop the way we do under the environment's influence. We can then understand how to click into this system and control it. Using our desires and intentions together with guidance based on learning nature's higher plan, we can enter into nature's control room and discover how and why everything was created the way it was. Asking about the purpose of life is the first step toward this discovery. Over the course of history and our individual lives, we develop through desires for food, sex, family, money, honor, control and knowledge, which are all desires that belong to our current level of perception and sensation. The desire for meaning and purpose already belongs to a higher level of perception and sensation, and asking about the meaning and purpose of life is the seed of its discovery. By learning how to direct this desire at the purpose of life, which is eternal and whole, we learn how to rise above our physical level of existence, and find ourselves living in a higher reality where we perceive how and why everything is operated. Moreover, From such a level of attainment, we also learn how to influence our very destiny. Based on the Daily Kabbalah Lesson with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman on September 20, 2015. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. My new article on LinkedIn, No Desire for Children, China as an Example. Recently, China lifted the cap on births from 2 to 3 in what it now defines as a 3-child policy. According to a story by David Stanway and Tony Munro published on Reuters, the reason for the policy shift is that recent data showed a dramatic decline in births. Although China cancelled its 1-child policy back in 2016 and raised the cap to 2 children, it failed to result in a sustained surge in births, state the writers. Now, Beijing has not only raised the cap once more, but added various incentives for married couples to have more children. I don't think the birth rate is a matter of policy. The Chinese, like most people all over the world, want fewer and fewer children. Humanity is growing increasingly selfish and people find no pleasure in raising children that they know will ignore them as soon as they can sustain themselves. Zhang Zainiu, a 30-year-old mother of one from Zhengzhou, the capital of Henan province, clearly articulated her characteristic attitude, thinking of the big picture, realistically, I don't want to have a second child. And a third is even more impossible. In light of our growing self-absorption, we are going to see a decline in the world population. Personally, I see nothing wrong with it. Technology will make up for any shortage in working hands, and there will be fewer mouths to feed and fewer people populating the already overpopulated planet. 100 years ago, humanity was about 2 billion people, now it is close to 8 billion. I see no harm in returning to more sustainable numbers. However, the more important question is not how many people there are in the world, but what they do here. If people are as hateful of each other as they are today, the fewer of us, the better for everyone. But if there is love and unity among people and nations, we can sustain as many people as we want, and we won't feel any crowdedness or shortage. Therefore, what is important is that we begin to invest not in birth rates but in shifting the attitudes of those who are already here from animosity to amity. Everything that is happening now, the tensions and pandemics, the crises and upheavals, should lead us to one conclusion: we must deal with the root cause of our problem, our relationships. Nature's laws dictate that we will operate in an integral and integrated manner, as does nature itself. Our relentless efforts to destroy one another economically, socially, and even physically, put us at odds with nature. We are opposite from the environment we live in, so how can we expect to feel good? Would you expect a fish out of water to feel good? Would you expect it to survive? This is what we are doing to ourselves. We are living in an interconnected and interdependent environment, yet we are behaving as though we are independent and self-sustaining beings. In such a state, we cannot feel good here, and in the long run, we won't be able to survive. We have come to a point, not only in China but the world over, that we must build our connections as an interdependent and interconnected network, just like the world around us. We are too big and too influential for nature to tolerate us, at our current level of disruption of its structure. Since we are inside of nature, and since nature created us, and sustains us, if we insist on fighting it, it will eradicate us, just as it eradicates any being that is incongruent with its laws. Therefore, instead of worrying about the quantity of people, we should worry about their quality, the level of our connectedness and mutual concern. My new article on LinkedIn, The Key to Efficiency in Our Lives. Modern life is characterized by an ongoing race to be more efficient, constantly raising the bar higher to become successful. But maximum efficiency is not always a guarantee of fulfillment. For that, we need goal management and a clear direction from the highest perspective in life. As with a race, even before we start, It is important to choose a direction for myself and develop a plan to implement it. Otherwise, we will surely reach the end of our lives without realizing the gift that nature has given only to us, our unique potential, to each and every one of us. Therefore, striving to be someone else and do what everyone does is the sure recipe to be mediocre and stay that way. Just because I run fast does not mean I will reach somewhere worthy faster. People usually chase after goals they have not even set for themselves. You will not decide for me, small children tell us, to demonstrate their independence. But in our lives as adults we constantly run where we have been told to run. We run fast, almost restlessly, constantly trying to become more efficient, to be precise. But, have we become slaves in this intent without a rational explanation of what we want to achieve? Whoever wants to break this vicious cycle must first of all avoid following what the majority does without questioning why one is doing it. Life is not a machine with values and goals automatically activated. What is worth living for? What do I want to do with life? Without clarifying these big questions about the essence of our existence, all efforts will be useless and meaningless. The end of the act is already contained in the initial thought. Our sages said to emphasize that first of all it is indispensable to find out what nature created us, for in order to realize what we can achieve in life. Then, the first step in being efficient is to ask myself what I live for. After I have found an answer for myself and defined a worthy goal, the second stage should be to find out how to achieve, what means do I need to achieve it. The third step is to surround myself with people who are also interested in achieving the same goal so that they will provide a supportive environment for me. It is important to internalize that without a supportive environment, a person cannot progress. We are social beings, and therefore we must absorb forces from our environment, similar to the seed that is in the soil and needs a suitable substrate of moisture, minerals and fertilizers in order to grow and thrive. I will be able to receive good examples from a supportive environment in which envy propels us to progress but gives us the necessary strength to move forward and overcome all obstacles on the way to realizing our potential. A waste of time, in the broadest sense of the word, is to flow with life and follow our natural tendencies. Therefore, whenever I feel distracted, I must return to the environment again and tell myself that I need to be in closer contact with it so that the environment can position me more correctly in the direction of the great goal I've chosen. By the way, this is also a very important tip for parents. Instead of trying to force your children to develop in the direction you want them to and provoking rejection in them, it would be better if you immerse them in an environment with children who are developing in the same direction you think is appropriate. Your children will get an urge to move toward the same purpose from others. It is the importance of the goals we set in advance what will make us meet those goals. It is therefore imperative to elevate the importance of the great goal we aspire to every day, to remind each other why it is important to us, and what it will give us in life. From an evolutionary point of view, the level of effectiveness of someone in the human race is measured by the degree of their participation in changing human relationships from egoistic relationships that threaten to destroy the world to altruistic relationships that will build an integral relationship between everyone. A person is considered efficient and beneficial to the system to the extent that he or she promotes good connections between people, and complementarity and reciprocity within society. Each of us will feel the total realization of what nature has given to us, alone to the same extent, a unique gift for every person in the world. Michael Leitman, on Quora, what is one reason to live in one sentence? The reason to live is in order to reach love your neighbor as yourself, through which we discover the higher, eternal and perfect existence among each other and with nature. Based on New Life episode 401 with Kabbalist Drive Michael Leitman, Aaron Levi and Telman Delborn Mosh on June 12, 2016. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. My new article on LinkedIn, how many more Euro championships? According to the entertainment industry news outlet Deadline, ESPN and ABC's coverage of the UEFA Euro 2020 soccer championships that kicked off last week has grown by 12% in viewers over the Euro 2016 tournament, and the championship has only just begun. Perhaps it's the return from the COVID-19 forced termination of league games and championships, or perhaps it is for other reasons, but despite all the hype, I think the tide will be short-lived. Humanity is losing interest in such games, our childhood days are coming to a close. As we grow, our wishes and aspirations change. This happens to every person, and it is also happening to all of humanity. People are beginning to look for more meaningful things to do with their time, so while watching sports games is still quite popular, it won't remain this way for long. But it isn't happening only in sports. It is happening in every realm of the entertainment industry, because entertainment, in the end, leaves us feeling empty. We are approaching a phase in our development where we are beginning to ask not just how to have more fun in life, but about the meaning of life itself. When we begin to ask about the meaning of life, we search for its origins. What happened before I was born? What will happen after I die? Is there life elsewhere in the universe? And other such questions. But in the end, we realize that the answer to the question about the meaning of life lies not in some distant planet or in the distant past or future, but right here, among us, in our human connections. The thing about human connections is that by changing our relation to each other, we change our perception of reality, and the world where they are always known transforms into a new creation. It's not magic, and it's not that reality has changed, it is simply that we are seeing a whole new layer of reality that we did not see before, which gives life, and all of existence, a whole new meaning. People like to play with augmented reality games, such as Pokemon Go, or use this technology to change the way things look. But when you see how everything is connected, your whole existence becomes augmented, transformed, enriched, and enlivened in ways we cannot even begin to imagine with our current, very limited perception. What is even better is that once we realize how connected we all are, we transform our relationships from negative to positive. Realizing our interdependence simply does not allow us to be mean to one another, as that would be like being mean to ourselves. Our sages knew all this thousands of years ago, and taught this to anyone who wished to learn. The Jerusalem Talmud, for example, offers this beautiful allegory about our connectedness. If the writing warns about habitual mistreatment, vengeance and bearing a grudge should be forbidden also toward those who are not from among your nation. Also, how is it possible for one to forgive an affront? Suppose one is cutting meat, and the knife descends into his hand, would he consider avenging his hand and cutting his other hand for cutting the first? So is this matter. The rule is that one does not take revenge against one's neighbor, for it is as though he is taking revenge against his own body, Deuteronomy 9:4. The Jerusalem Talmud was redacted in the 3rd century. Can we imagine what history would have looked like had we absorbed the profound love and connection radiating from this excerpt? What would human history look like if we felt the way the authors of the Talmud described? What would our planet look like? Would there be pollution? Would there be exploitation? Would there be wars, hunger, or poverty? I believe you know the answer. Therefore, the sooner we embrace our connected future, the sooner this truly augmented reality will become our reality, and our lives will be what they can be, and what we hope them to be. My new article on LinkedIn, reply to a question about Jews and Arabs in Israel. One of my students told me that since the beginning of Operation Guardian of the Walls, the most recent military campaign against Hamas in Gaza, dozens of Israeli Arabs left positive messages on my Hebrew Facebook page. They didn't relate to the conflict, but expressed their agreement with the message of unity that I am conveying there. The student asked me if I could explain their sudden interest in the content on my page. I think it's easier for Arab Israelis to access my content than it is for Arabs in other countries for the simple reason that Arab Israelis speak and read Hebrew. From the content of their comments, which are also written in Hebrew, it's clear that they agree with the message in my words, and this, I think, should be the clearest message to the Jews regarding what we need to do if we truly want peace. First, I think it's easier for Arab Israelis to access my content than it is for Arabs in other countries for the simple reason that Arab Israelis speak and read Hebrew. From the content of their comments, which are also written in Hebrew, it's clear that they agree with the message in my words, and this, I think, should be the clearest message to the Jews regarding what we need to do if we truly want peace. The message, as we know, is simple. The world has no respect for us, because we have no respect for the connection between us. Our sages repeated this message in the ears of our ancestors. They wrote about it profusely, yet we refused to listen. Antisemites, too, have told us, in countless ways, that they despised our loathing of each other. History has repeatedly shown that the worst blows we suffered from the nations came after periods of intensified discord and infighting among us, and our most prosperous times were during strong internal unity. Now the Arabs are telling us the same message. In my eyes, they are not enemies, they are messengers who tell us that they will appreciate us when we appreciate the connection between us. It is the same message that the nations of the world have been telling us since our inception as a nation, but now it is being told by our contemporaries. To me, the positive response of our Arab neighbors to the message of Jewish unity is a testimony to the paramount need to begin the process of reconciliation with our neighbors, with reconciliation among ourselves. The sooner we start, the better it will be for everyone, for the Jews in Israel, for the Arabs in Israel, and for the rest of the world. As soon as we begin to unite, we will find that the Arabs are not our enemies, they are our partners. For more on this topic, refer to the books The Jewish Choice, Unity or Antisemitism, Historical Facts on Antisemitism as a Reflection of Jewish Social Discord, and Like a Bundle of Reeds, Why Unity and Mutual Guarantee are Today's Call of the Hour. My new article on LinkedIn, A Maximum Plan and a Minimum Plan for the Government. As we evidently see, the state of Israel is unlike any other country. We're trying to conduct ourselves like the rest of the world. But we're not. This is why we have been in a political limbo for the past several years. The problem is that we don't know what we should be like, so we look for role models in the world around us. However, they are not right for us, and we are seeing the results. Therefore, I think our government needs to conduct itself in two parallel routes, one that follows a maximum plan, and one that follows a minimum plan. The maximum plan is the nation in its ideal state of solidarity and union, the minimum plan is sustaining ourselves until we get there. The minimum plan has two primary objectives, defense and life. Defense means securing Israel's borders and addressing military threats to its population. Life means seeing that the economy as a whole is functioning, including the job market, industry and agriculture, and housing, and to maintain the healthcare and welfare systems. As stated, the overall objective of the minimum plan is to sustain us until we realize the maximum plan. The maximum plan relates to the ultimate goal of the State of Israel, namely to bring the people of Israel to complete unity and solidarity, to the point of realizing the motto of the Jewish people, love your neighbor as yourself. To achieve this, the government must establish an educational system that pertains to all ages, from kindergarten through school, higher education, work, and even retirement homes. Currently, the nation is in dire need of unity. Its factions are divided and hate each other's guts. They undermine one another and in the process, they weaken the entire country. Therefore, our survival as a sovereign state depends on our solidarity and unity. If we generate them, we will thrive and prosper. If we do not, we will be overrun by our multiple enemies from without and from within. Moreover, the nature of our people does not permit us to acknowledge that someone else is right and we are wrong. It is with good reason that the Torah refers to the Jews as a stiff-necked people, Exodus 30-9, and it is not about to change. Therefore, any plan to generate unity must take into consideration that it must build this accord atop existing, persisting, and even increasing discord. While this is clearly a formidable challenge, the other option is the dissolution of the State of Israel. In light of all this, the Maximum Plan will detail and implement the steps toward establishing initial unity, based on the understanding that we are dependent on each other, and either we all succeed or we all fail. Subsequently, the plan will outline the stages of enhancing and solidifying that unity using instances of discord and disputes as incentives for enhancing our unity. To succeed, the entire nation must commit to the process. If only some of us seek to establish unity, and the rest of us do not, the process will fail. In his essay Mutual Responsibility, the great 20th century Kabbalist and thinker Yehuda Ashlag, aka Baal HaSulam, offered a poignant analogy from the Book of Zohar pertaining to our mutual responsibility. If a part of the nation does not want to keep the mutual responsibility, they cause the rest of the nation to remain immersed in their filth and lowliness, of self-interest, without finding a way out of their filth. Therefore, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, author of the Zohar, described mutual responsibility as two people sailing in a boat, when one of them begins to drill a hole in the boat. His friend says, "Why are you drilling?" The other replies, "Why should you care? I am drilling under me, not under you." So the friend replies, "You fool. We will both drown together in the boat. Right now, we're sinking. We're drilling holes in our boat out of vindictiveness, and we don't realize, or don't care that in the process, we are drowning ourselves, as well. Still, we haven't sunk. If we pull together, we will cruise ashore. If we stay apart, we'll sink for sure." This is why I believe that the government must run the Maximum Plan and the Minimum Plan concurrently, with the goal of bringing the people of Israel to the finish line of mutual responsibility and love of others as soon as it possibly can. Michael Leitman, on Quora, "Will we ever have world peace?" World peace seems like a far-fetched utopian concept when we look at today's world. To start with, what is peace? Is it simply the opposite of war? When we look into the word peace from the perspective of the wisdom of Kabbalah, we find a different definition to how the term is commonly conceived, and we also receive a method on how to achieve it. Peace is commonly considered a state of no war. Humanity has created several peace treaties, ceasefires and armistices after tough conflicts, wars, and much suffering, and it is always a question of how long they will last until the next outburst. The term peace in Hebrew, shalom, equates to completion or perfection, shalem. Is it enough that we have an absence of war in order to experience perfection? Of course not. If we look deeper into the word peace, we arrive at the common root of our nature, before we divided into different genders, races, species and diverse nations. In today's world, where we find ourselves among a rapidly rising global population of billions of people, we perceive ourselves as separate from each other, and often not at peace. Moreover, our lack of knowledge on how to reach peace is our main problem. The wisdom of Kabbalah describes how nature develops us toward a state of total world peace. Approaching peace, however, requires recognizing that nature is an interconnected and interdependent system, and that we humans are the only disruptors of the sensitive balance in nature. More specifically, the human ego, which is a desire to enjoy at the expense of others, harms us, the world and nature. Interestingly, as far back as 1930, in his article, Peace in the World, Kabbalist Yehuda Ashlag, Baal HaSulam, recognize the interconnected state of the world, do not be surprised if I mix together the well-being of a particular collective with the well-being of the whole world, because indeed, we have already come to such a degree that the whole world is considered one collective and one society. How, then, do we achieve world peace? Achieving world peace requires a long-term comprehensive social form of education that aims to raise us, to discover a state of completion and perfection, and this is where the wisdom of Kabbalah, which describes nature's causes, plan and functionality, can be of assistance. Kabbalah describes how we can impact self-transformation to change our egoistic nature to an altruistic one, a necessary change in order to reach a state of peace. As part of this transformation, we learn how to rise above our divisive drives that bring about separation between people and nations. Similar to a couple that makes up after an argument, uniting above division is what strengthens our connection. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov explained, "The essence of peace is to try to make peace between two opposites, like yitzot, peace." Also, it is written in Proverbs 10:12, that love will cover all transgressions. Nature also contains a plethora of opposites working harmoniously as a single common system, light and darkness, heat and cold, sweet and bitter, and so on. A process that leads to world peace thus depends on the development of an inclusion between opposites up to a point where a new feeling of the world emerges. Instead of feeling them and us, we come to feel a common whole in which we are all important parts. Moreover, the wisdom of Kabbalah explains that we are all headed to a state of world peace, and Kabbalah is a method that lets us achieve this state faster, more enjoyable and with growing wisdom, knowledge and consciousness of the nature we all share. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. Flame of love from the fire of hate. Love is the greatest measure of connection there can possibly be between two opposite things. We are constantly growing, each one in their egoism, and we must make corrections upon it in order to reach connection in spite of our egoism. It turns out that within me I am becoming more and more egoistic and as if distancing myself from others. But at the same time, I must build such an attitude that brings me closer to everyone, so that all my egoism turns into bestowal. Within me, I become an increasingly crude egoist, but on the outside, I add restriction, screen, and reflected light, and the forces of unification to such a degree of connection that I come to love. The fire of hate burns inside, and the flame of love burns outside. This is called the depth of desire, restriction, screen, and reflected light, which are leading to connection and adhesion. This is how it inverts from the inside out. And a person feels the difference between all these states, attains from this the depth of creation, the matter of creation, and the creator who created this entire process, this system from outside inward and in a person from within outward. We should try to see the creator behind every friend who is concealed behind him. After all, the creator conceals himself in such a way, he has no image, no opportunity to reveal himself. This is why he builds such a special envelope and projects himself through it, through humanity, through the universe, through all the phenomena of this world. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah Lesson June 15, 2021, Advance by Overcoming. Joshua, the disciple of Moses. Question. In the first chapter of the book of Joshua, it is said that the Creator says to Joshua, son of Nun, "Just be strong and very courageous to observe and do in accordance with all of the Torah that Moses my servant has commanded you. Do not stray there from right or left, in order that you succeed wherever you go." The people add, "Only be strong and have courage, only that the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses." What does this mean? Answer: Moses led the people of Israel to the Jordan River, but he remained on the other side of the river. Everything that is written in Kabbalistic sources must be perceived allegorically, in a spiritual form. Crossing the Jordan River means crossing the border into the land of Israel. The land of Israel is the feeling of the Creator in an explicit and brief form. After crossing the border, the people are led forward by Joshua, not Moses. Joshua is a warrior. Moses is a teacher who spent the main period of preparation with the people. He took the people who were in the slavery of egoism, led them through the desert, the detachment from the ego, tore them away from it, raised them above egoism, and gave them the opportunity to continue the path of exaltation further and further, higher and higher. From CapTV's Secrets of the Eternal Book, June 11, 2021. Stairway to the Heights of Creation. When we first start studying Kabbalah, we feel confident, masters of our lives who know what to do. But after studying for a while, we suddenly lose this confidence. And this is given to us, on purpose, not as a direct consequence of studying Kabbalah, but as a result of a new, more serious attitude of the Creator toward us. The Creator wants me to connect my whole life only with Him, that is, to go through life holding on to two forces. One force is the knowledge of this world, that is, the ability to organize your material life normally as it should be. But at the same time, I must go with the force of faith, which is spiritual. All your attitude should be divided into two distinct parts, the attitude to spiritual life and to material life. With regard to material existence, I must try to be as calm as possible so as not to transfer the tension and dissatisfaction that I feel from my spiritual progress. This is our work, and if a person knows how to put everything in its place correctly, he will very quickly advance in the spiritual. We need to understand that material life is given to us, not only to provide for our daily bread, but as an integral addition to spiritual advancement. We are obliged to develop in the material plane as well as in the spiritual plane, and in the end try to connect the two worlds together. You will see how well everything fits together. My teacher Rabesh worked at a construction site as a reinforcement fitter, a concrete worker, then a shoemaker, and an office worker. He took any job he could get because it wasn't easy to get a job in those days. A person must work, be married, support a family, and try to balance everything. It is with the right balance of all areas of life that a person can optimally advance. But in any case, it will take years because being in from this lowest, worst world, we gradually build ourselves a ladder to reach the summit of all creation. And you have already climbed this ladder a little, but these steps are still unconscious, like a baby who lives, but does not understand his life, where he lives, what for, and why. To understand this, he still needs to keep growing. But one day we will definitely grow up to it. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, June 15, 2021, Advance by Overcoming. Michael Leitman, on Quora, what are the main reasons for increased divorce rates? The enveloping reason for increased divorce rates is due to natural human evolution. Our times are characterized by exiting the animal level of development and rising to the human level. In other words, nature is urging us to connect as a single global interdependent framework of humanity. Since there is a growing need to connect as a single global system, we find our personal connections breaking more and more. Nature wants us to look beyond the family framework in order for us to later return to it on a different level. That is where we feel humanity is a single family. In our individual lives, we experience a feeling of being in love, where we are overtaken by powerful emotions, excitement, inspiration, and a seeming perfection that was worth striving for in order to be together and upon which we could build a family. However, over time, we lost this feeling. Why, then, do we naturally fall in love if later that feeling dissipates? What we need to understand is that we are in a system that nature runs. In this system, nature wants us to discover true eternal love, that is, as love exists in nature itself. In the process, it wants us to detach from the conceptions and feelings of being in love that we experience temporarily in our current reality. We thus need to change our instinctive attraction to the other sex, which is fueled by natural passion and hormones, to a more goal-oriented connection. We form the connections we currently know because we live for our children or our shared household. Moreover, being together is convenient because it lets us support each other as we grow older. Today, however, we need to find a new, deeper kind of connection. We thus see more and more cases of divorce because we are in this transitional era where we already start feeling an increasing lack in the traditional frameworks that once held us together, that there is an additional and more sublime drive that we need in order to sustain and grow a happy family in our times. If we can tap into this drive, which we have yet to accurately identify, we can set ourselves off on a path to discover a completely new feeling that emerges in a more goal-oriented connection to each other. We can then springboard from our increasing distaste toward our current frameworks to seek connections on a whole other level, a much stronger and warmer family-like connection among all humanity. If we enter such a sensation, then we discover a fulfillment that we have never felt before. It is as if we float freely, becoming very light and feeling an eternal thrush of life permeate us. While we have the opportunity and the ability to determine these new goal-oriented connections through connection-enriching education, we see how these explanations go largely unnoticed. Nature thus prods us from behind by means of pain and suffering, and we find all kinds of connections that we once held shattering, with divorce being a key indicator of our broken connections in relation to the family. The purpose of this increasing feeling of detachment we feel, including the increasing divorce rates, is in order for us to get sick of our separation and develop a sincere new desire to connect on a whole other level. Eventually, we will make motions to connect in this new way, since we will find that otherwise we will be cornered. When we start connecting as nature requires us to, we will then discover the beauty in such connection. Therefore, together with the increasing irreconcilable hatred and disagreements that break up more and more families, there surfaces a new sincere need for love. If we all understand the sublime fulfillment that true love brings, then we will want to have these feelings in our families. We will then return to the family after we learn how to love the entirety of humanity, and we will then wish to share a deeper and more uniquely personal and internal version of this connection with a spouse. Based on New Life Episode 19 on February 2, 2012 with Kabbalist Drive Michael Leitman, Aaron Levi and Telman Delbaum Moshe. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. The Creator's order to each person. We should try to see the Creator behind every friend, who is concealed behind him. After all, the Creator conceals himself in such a way, he has no image, no opportunity to reveal himself. This is why he builds such a special envelope and projects himself through it, through humanity, through the universe, through all the phenomena of this world, through inanimate nature, plants, animals, and people. The Creator is behind all of them, and therefore, through our attitude to the inanimate, vegetative, and animate world, and humanity, we can come closer to the Creator. We just need to correctly treat the inanimate, vegetative, and animate degrees, that is, to use them only to the extent necessary for our existence. And to humanity we must relate in love your neighbor as yourself, through which we come to the love for the Creator. As it is written, love your neighbor as yourself, I am the Lord. That is, the Creator, as if signs it as his order to each person to reach love. Through it, we correct our soul, finish with the corporeal reality that we now see before us, and begin to ascend to the upper world. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson June 15, 2021. Advance by overcoming. Allusions o spiritual properties and de actions. Question. On Purim traditionally, sweet cakes are eaten shaped to resemble Haman's pockets. What is it about this symbol? Answer. In our world, there is a connection between the root and the branch. Therefore, we must somehow display all this in the branches. The people should be attached to such things. Question. Isn't it primitive that in the 21st century we are following these traditions? Answer. I believe that our century is the most primitive of all previous centuries. The more we develop, the more our egoism grows. Therefore, we suddenly begin to feel like some kind of greatness and criticize previous centuries, scientists, and everyone else. But they understood much better than we did about the structure of the worlds, the forces of creation. They knew these roots, saw them, guessed them, and understood what they were dealing with, not in order to make some kind of historical story out of this, but to include in the system of correction so that each generation makes its own correction and gradually we would come to complete correction, which is called Purim. Question. Is that why they introduced the tradition of eating sweets shaped like Haman's pockets to the people? Answer. Of course. All this was done by the great Kabbalists. There are innumerable allusions to spiritual properties and actions that we must perform. Question. It is customary to give gifts on Purim. In honor of what? In honor of joy? Answer. Yes, because when we connect with each other, we fulfill each other. I am you, you are me. And each individual cannot fulfill himself. Purim is the final correction. The Creator created egoism, an evil inclination that is completely corrected. From Cab TV's Spiritual States. Feel like a single structure. Question. Are the fragments of the common soul that has been shattered placed in almost every one of us? Answer. Yes, there is only one common soul, one common desire, that the Creator created. There's nothing else but Him. Everything that we perceive as existing around us, and in us, happens only in this desire. As we grow closer together, the common desire will manifest itself more and more until we begin to feel like one person with one heart, one thought, and one intention. And then we will really come to feel like one structure that is completely dependent on each other, perfectly understands and coordinates itself with others. Question. Where is the place for the Torah here? Answer. We see in our lives that when a person is born, he does not need any Torah, guidance, instructions, nothing. He lives like a small animal. This is how we develop our young children. And then the child manifests more and more as an independent, individual person, and we have to treat him accordingly, as it is said, bring up the boy in his ways. In the same way, gradually, the correction of the initially broken common soul manifests itself. Now we are at the very last stage when all the previous four stages have already been more or less passed and are ready for the final correction. In general, it all depends on the last stage. At this stage, we must properly understand ourselves, our origin, our history, our purpose, and realize all this. From Cab TV's Secrets of the Eternal Book, May 19, 2021. Create a new system of perception. Question. According to what you say, the Creator does not exist in our world. So who pushes us from behind to reveal Him? Answer. You can say anything you like about that. For example, who is it that makes the sun go round? Who creates all the laws of nature and provides the energy for everything to exist? Where does it all stem from? Our world is very small and it exists only in our imagination. If we did not look at our world, it would not exist. Kabbalists spoke about that ages ago, and scientists are beginning to find this out only now. Our world exists only subjectively in our imagination and not more than that. If we want to transcend our limits, we need to hold on to the group and together create a new system of perception. Thus, We will begin to feel the real existence, the true system of providence of the world. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, March 17, 2019.